Let us recall to our minds this morning that the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. If one feels in accord with these words and wishes to investigate how they too may participate, the following, in the shape of a form signed by associates of the United Lodges of Theosophists, says this: being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge as set forth in its declaration, I hereby record my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. Having read the declaration, we'll now proceed to give you a program for the rest of the month of May, the topic being psychism and spirituality. Today is May 16th. The topic will be higher and lower psychic powers. Now during the week, on Wednesday evening, the doors open at 5:30. The library is open and will close promptly at 7:30. We're studying From the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. And you may come in and ask the volunteer librarian for a copy and study the topic for that evening. Also, you'll find in that library various references and, of course, the theosophical literature going back years. In the front of the building, next to the library, is a desk upon which you will find theosophical literature, straight by. You can examine this literature during library hours, before and after the meeting. Someone will be at that desk to answer all of your questions. The meeting's Wednesday night. Actually, the study class begins at 7:45, over at 9:00. A student will give a summary, and then the topic is thrown open for questions, comments, and a sharing of our understanding of that particular topic that evening. As you see, we opened at 10:30 this morning. We began at 11 and we'll end at noon. Sunday are very interesting because it could be a forum, a talk, a panel. And if you wish to participate again in any of these activities, see the associate at the desk when you leave. Now, there are a few other things that we'd like to tell you about, and that is Fridays, the third Friday of every month. Generally, there is a meeting from 7, or get together rather, from 7 to 8 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Now, the third Friday this month is May 21st, and the topic, the triangle and the star. So you see, it's the message concerning symbols. If you're new, pick up one of these called the Declaration of ULT, and in it you will see information on the bottom as reference to our web page here and also the email address. If there are any further questions on how this is done, I'd like to inform you that it's all carried on by voluntary contributions of time. But you may participate by going to the desk, and the student will tell you that it's all due to donations, money, and time included. So any donation that you wish to give is entirely up to you. But as you see, the building, as it is, has been here for years and years, due solely to those associates, those students who support it. We think we covered everything. If there are any new issues, feel free to mention them now. Our reading this morning will be from The Voice of the Silence, devotional book. Chosen fragments for the daily use of Lanus, or disciples, translated and annotated by, and the initials are HPB. Thou canst create this day, thy chances for thy morrow. In the great journey, causes sown each hour bear each its harvests of effects, for rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of never-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe. The karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Be of good cheer and rest content with fate. Such is thy karma, the karma of the cycle of thy birth. The destiny of those who in their pain and sorrow are born along with thee, rejoice and weep from life to life chained to thy previous actions. Act thou for them today and they will act for thee tomorrow. 'Tis from the bud of renunciation of the self that springeth the sweet fruit of final liberation. To perish doomed is he who out of fear of Mara refrains from helping man, lest he should act for self. The pilgrim who would cool his weary limbs in running waters, yet dares not plunge for terror of the stream, risks to succumb from heat. Inaction based on selfish fear can bear but evil fruit. The selfish devotee lives to no purpose. The man who does not go through his appointed work in life has lived in vain. Follow the wheel of life, follow the wheel of duty to race and kin, to friend and foe, and close thy mind to pleasures as to payment. Exhaust the law of karmic retribution. Gain cities for thy future birth.
Thank you. Well, what are cities? There are miraculous powers, powers of great strengths, but they require knowledge of our constitution, our sevenfold constitution, knowledge of our purpose here as a lodge to spread broadcast the teachings of brotherhood, for the investigation of the laws of nature, the hidden, the occult laws of nature, and for the investigation of those occult laws and those occult powers. But it is for the investigation, not the practice of those, for those at our stage. Because there's great danger, and we are warned time and again. And initially we may think that, oh, how harmful can it be, really? You know, I mean, it's just innocent. It's going to a fortune teller or playing with some crystals or the Ouija board. For the next several weeks, for the remainder of our winter course in the Ocean of Theosophy, we are warned about these powers. And chapters 16 and 17 are fully devoted to psychic powers and their attainment, spiritualism, mediumship. But all these powers also have their, fortunately, they have the other side, which is, there are two paths, really. There are, with the higher and lower psychic powers, there's the path of mediumship and there's the path of adeptship. We don't want to forget to, we have a pamphlet after the meeting you can pick up for 10 cents if you don't have it already, on mediatorship, which is that with the perfected will of the adept, mediatorship, we'll get into that a little later, is the opposite of mediumship. Now, it's interesting, the word miracle, we looked it up, and we like to do this occasionally, look up words that we take for granted in everyday use and say, well, was there a prior usage? Where did it come from? What language did it come from? Miracle comes from the Latin, which was miraculum, we think. But anyway, miracle comes from the Latin, and it just meant something of wonder, a wondrous power. And certainly, if we look around us now in the middle of May, who would think in those snowstorms that we suffered through in February, March, that we would arrive at this stage, that nature would renew itself indeed. We had our doubts at times, shoveling 3 feet of snow at a time. But so it was the church who turned something which is a power of wonder all around us into something that was the province of priest and priestcraft. And in doing that, we surrendered our soul, in a sense. So we have the higher and the lower here. And, you know, never the twain shall meet, it is said. But at our stage, as aspiring students of the arcane philosophy and aspiring to become practical theosophists in thought, word, and deed, we're learning now to try to express these wondrous powers in a practical way. So we look around us and we see we see all these wonders, things that seem miraculous, but there is a law. There are laws of nature which are, they're boundless, they're immutable, they're innate. They are within us. We grow as the flower grows, from within, without. So there's this hidden universe that the religious feeling is one, it is really the most basic feeling that there is. We are told that it comes from the great initiators at the beginning of humanity, that these perfected beings, and the Ocean of Theosophy starts in chapter one on the positive note with the masters and the perfected beings, and it ends with the warnings on psychism. But these perfected beings, they, through self-induced and self-devised methods in prior periods of evolution, they came back to teach us and to instruct us in all the arts and sciences. So we sat there by the feet of masters, and with great devotion and awe at this great boon, the spiritual gifts that were given to us freely when our higher, the higher manus, the higher mind was lit up. And that is what separates us from the lower kingdoms. We developed this feeling of devotion and awe and this religious feeling, this religious impulse, which is really the most basic and the most innate feeling that we have. Everyone has it to some degree or another. So, but the cycle came some 2,000 years ago where that was all obscured. And so we saw some 2,000 years ago all these false teachers, that the true teachings had in a sense gone underground, and these false teachers came forth, and there was much wonderment and psychism, and then there was a reaction to that, and then the established church said, well, no, this is just the province of the priest. So on the one hand, it was kind of, all the freelancers were kind of banished in a sense, but then it was the province of the church for 1500 years. But in the Renaissance, then there was a rebirth of not only all the ancient teachings, all the Gnostic teachings, all the great teachings, which were vivifying and spiritually uplifting, but also cycles of psychism started to come in, and they really started to flower when science broke away from the church and there was materialistic science, which was mixed with the spiritualism, and things became very much degraded. But fortunately, upon the scene for the last, since the Renaissance really, and it was the impulse for the Renaissance, Tsongkhapa gathered all the adepts together in 1375 and vowed that the last quarter of each century, there would be an upliftment. There would be a new spiritual impulse. So just like in the winter time, we're wondering, it seems the darkest and the coldest, but under the ground, the root systems are working. Everything is really thrilling. Everything is alive. Everything's coming forth. And in the last quarter of each century, there is a spiritual impulse. So for the first time ever in modern, as far as we know, the first time ever, these arcane spiritual teachings and these warnings about psychism came forth in the last quarter of the 19th century. The teachers were upon the scene, and they told us that this stargazing, these crystals, this wonderment, this going to someone to predict your future is passive. It's giving up, it's surrendering, it can only lead to ruin in the end. That all these were done for selfish reasons. How to invest in business or manipulate the stock market, or how to win the love of someone. It's all these were lower psychic powers, and that mediumship ends in ruin. It ends in absolute ruin. But there is something called mediatorship, which once we realize, mediatorship is the controlled will of the adept to perform miraculous powers, but with a totally selfless, for the upliftment of not only humanity but all of nature, that it is the controlled will of the adept. It includes genius. It's a spiritual genius, though. It's not a genius in any one area. It's knowing how and when to act, and never interfering with the will of the other. Now, with psychism, the libraries, not the libraries so much, but the popular bookstores are full of books and full of methods how to gain powers over others, but this is black magic, and it will only end in ruin. So we are told that that there are two paths. There is the higher and the lower. And those of us who really want to help humanity and feel that basic spiritual impulse that was imbued in us 18 million years ago, that we have to do it with knowledge, but we're not told. There's the expression, an adept becomes, he is not made. We are given hints to awaken our intuition, that higher self, that Bodhi principle, which is the highest part of our nature that we can access. That we have to lift the self by the self. We have to lift the mind up and away from that lower part of our nature, which is the kamic part, which are the desires, the separative, selfish desires for personal gain. We have to move away from that, and we are given many hints in all of the devotional books. In the reading before the class, it says about the duty to kith and kin, that duty is the royal talisman. So these powers, which are innate in us all, they need to be brought out. And there comes a time when if we follow the duty to kith and kin, if we follow the royal talisman, that we come into contact with those who can help us, that the messengers, the message and the messengers are always there, but we should not be looking for masters to materialize and to come and work with us personally. The master's duty is to all humanity, to all of the race. So if we're looking for a master or a teacher to work with us personally, then we're still tied up with the lower self. We're still looking for special privileges and special powers. And they do not work that way. They are alive and well, but they do not generally come among us because of that karmic nature that we have not managed to overcome yet, of that astral, which is the realm of the lower psychic powers. The astral, it covers the entire earth, and it's within and without of us, but all of the denizens of the seance rooms, all of the spooks, all of the malignant spirits are within the astral, and we need to rise above that. We need to purify ourselves and to purify our natures so as we are not being constantly thrown by the astral nature. So if we can raise the self by the self and rise above, then we will get to the point where, well, that we can perfect ourselves. We are perfectible. Let's just say that. Let's put that out there, because that is what the religions, they all say that we're poor, miserable sinners and that we need someone or something to save ourselves. But that is a blind alley. The first fundamental is the perfectibility of ourselves, that we are eternal, boundless, immutable, uncreate. We have existed. We exist in time now, but we exist within and without of time. And we are here really to raise up all of humanity. We had some notes and some sayings here. Well, we think, we choose, and we act, either intelligently or unintelligently. If we are aware of these psychic powers, high or low, called soul powers, the tendency towards psychism of the lower natures, the tendency is toward psychism of the lower natures of the body. So we do not want to yield to the weak mortal flesh . It can result in obsession and possession. It is the doctrine of hope and also the doctrine of responsibility. We have hope because we have seen examples, great examples, like the Buddha, the Christ, Krishna. We have the testimony of thousands of people that knew them in the flesh, and also those who have followed their ways and put into practice the principles of brotherhood. And on this testimony, of this testimony, we have to put into practice in our lives. So we have the choice between mediumship, which is passivity, selfishness, and ruin, or adeptship, which is the perfected will guided by the altruistic spirit and directed not for self but for others. Because whenever we think of ourself, our lower selves and our lower needs, we are separating ourselves and we are on the path to mediumship. So each day at our path in our development, until we reach a certain point where there is no going back, that moment of choice that is spoken of, which is not for the generality of humanity until the middle of the next round. But until that time, daily, we decide which path we want to walk, the path of adeptship or the path of mediumship. Yes.
Could you define the word psychic?
Psychic can be, we have the definition in here, but it's, it can be higher or lower. Actually, there are higher and lower psychic powers. There's clairvoyance, telepathy, psychometry. We didn't go too much into the actual powers themselves, but psychic. Go ahead, in the back.
Well, we were thinking, aside from the use of psychic, that really, in a way, psychic represents the feeling nature, not the pure mind and not the impulse, but the feeling nature.
Okay, so psychic could be the feeling nature. Yes.
One of the interesting points made was that in order to understand this topic, we have to have a knowledge of our sevenfold nature. So what, where do the lower psychic powers fit in with our sevenfold nature, and where do the higher psychic powers fit in with that same nature?
Okay, so where do the lower and the higher of the sevenfold nature fit in with our psychic powers? Well, there's the, in a sense, we're standing on a bridge. And on the one side are demons and the other side are angels. We look at the one side as our lower passions and desires, which are always, we are spirit working through matter, but we have, over the years, overdeveloped, like the myth of Narcissus, we've fallen in love with our own reflection. And the reflection is not the reality, it is an illusion. But it's a really interesting and really pretty and really fun at times illusion, but it's not real. And on the other side of the bridge, we see light, we see beauty, we feel this religious feeling. We know that there's more. We know that that's false. We know that there's higher. We know that there's no greater joy in life, really, than helping others. That's what really does it. When you can help someone without enabling them, when you can give them that, when you see that spark in their eyes that goes off. So the higher and lower psychic, that passional, it's where our passion lies. Does our passion lay in just experiencing this life through the senses, through the five lower senses? Or does it lie in awakening that higher sense, that higher spirit, that Buddhi, that which is the storehouse of wisdom, which we all share in? And truth is one, and truth is recognized, when truth is recognized, there's that upliftment. That's so we think that it's like standing on a bridge, looking at one side, that what we think is beauty are really the barking fiends, and that's the reality of it. And on the other side, what we perceive as haziness is that feeling that really makes us warm and fuzzy inside. It's that feeling that lifts all of nature and leaves nothing out.
So could we say that of a personal nature, if we live in that part of our nature mostly about our wants, our needs, our likes, our dislikes, that it's all wound up within this physical that we think is the all, that we're dealing with what we would call a lower psychic nature, whereas the higher psychic nature, it seems, would be more universal, more altruistic, more on a universal level entirely, so that the personal doesn't really get involved with that feeling, but yet does get involved with something of a universal uplifting nature.
Right. We have to ask ourselves, is this leaving anybody out? Is this decision leaving anybody out in the cold? Is this hurting anybody? Am I taking undue advantage of anyone else? And if we are, then it's not a good decision. And then we have to suffer the consequences, because karma is we must act. We are always acting, either by our actions or our inactions. But as thinking beings, always living in the moment, that is where eternity lies, in the moment. Yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, as the saying goes. And it's a good thing to remember. So we will suffer the consequences of our acts. But that, in fact, karma is—it's not mean. It's impersonal. It's delivering to us our just desserts. That is the only way we're going to learn. A lot of people in the early society and today too, coming from the religious backgrounds that most of us come from, we think that, oh, you know, it's not fair. Why do I have to suffer? But that's the only way we learn. We need to transmute that suffering, and we can. If we can get out of the way, if we can get out of the personal, and if we can realize that this is coming to my door, not because I, well, in a sense, it's almost like we ordered it from a catalog, and now it's coming to our door. and it's got our name on it, and we need to transmute this.
Well, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery. Today is my chance to either change the order or rewrite my story or add to it for the betterment. So I don't care about yesterday and I don't care about tomorrow because I own today.
We do own today. It's yes.
So these psychic powers, we are, you're saying then that we are psychic beings and that we are using these psychic powers now, and we just may not be conscious or even
yes.
self-conscious of using them, but we use them all the time. Our thinking, our feeling nature, as was mentioned before. So if we do not act responsibly, that means how we feel and how we act, that's using our psychic powers in a degraded manner?
It is. How we feel, how we think, how we act, that is who we are, and who we are is a reflection of the moment. We are the reflection in this moment of that amount of karma that we've generated over millions of years, but is acting out now. And we have that. We have the thing to remember is that we have this great storehouse of wisdom and knowledge within us. It has been impressed on us, but we need to think, feel, and act in such a way that we are in balance. And when we are, the best and the brightest can come forth. Yes.
But in the moment, we are more than the karma that's coming to us. We are the observers, the thinkers,
yes.
Witnessing that. So, if we are that mind being, that thinking being, how do we get to the point where we are passive in developing the lower psychic powers? And on the opposite side, how do we get to the point where we become more active as mind beings and develop the higher psychic, or what you described as mediumship versus mediatorship? How do we get on those two paths?
How do we get on these two paths? Well, when spirit and matter meet in man, and self-consciousness arises, we're given choices. We're given choices that it says that, you know, those higher beings, in a sense, are jealous of us because we can act however we want. They act within the law, though, but the reality is that they would only act in one way because they have become the law. They know the law, they have become the law. There's the sense that ignorance is no excuse, and we know this. The ignorance of the law is no excuse. That works in the courts most of the time, in the mundane courts. But how do we become that? How do we become the higher? How do we become the lower? We can become the lower by listening to those that we really shouldn't listen to. There's people, places, and things. If we go, we are instructed by our parents to avoid certain friends, certain situations, certain things. But since we are self-conscious beings, and since we are endowed with that power to choose, we choose unwisely. We really can't say why we choose unwisely, other than we've let our guard down, and we've let influences in. We've let bad influences into our lives, and if we ally ourselves with them, just like water seeks its own level, we become like those. Now, how do we choose the other path? Well, as self-conscious beings and as choosers, we come to the knowledge, we have eaten of the fruit of the tree of both good and evil, and we must taste the evil and know, in a sense, that it is rotten, and we must put that aside and turn away from it. And in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the great battle between the higher and the lower self, we realize that we need to, in a sense, slay all those passions and desires and companions that we once associated with if we are ever going to rise above. And that's what we need to do. It's only by pain and suffering that we turn and realize that we, you know, if we really want to, in a sense, it can be self-interest at first. It's, we generally go to doctors because we want them to stop the pain. And in a sense, at first, it's we want to stop this pain. We want to stop these things happening to me. And then eventually, we go from there. We realize that, well, once, you know, we can learn and grow and help others, and that's a whole other impulse. In the back?
Well, it sounds sometimes like it's just a question of semantics, the battle between the higher and lower self, but in reality, it's a question of principles and ideas. There is only one self, so it's the battle between the higher or the lower self. It's the ideas I hold, the choices I make. If I think I have been mistreated, or everyone else is getting something that I don't get, I am going to focus as the lower. And the things that I do are going to end up making greater problems for me. But if the ideas I hold are clearer, and the realization that I am responsible, then I'm slowly turning towards the higher part of life.
Another way to say it is that we have a personality and an individuality, that the individuality is the real man, the higher, the three higher principles, and that the personality is in the lower, but we need to raise it up.
Well, you had mentioned the Bhagavad Gita, and a previous question was about how do we develop this higher psychic powers and so forth, you know, how do we cultivate that? And the Gita says very plainly, through single-mindedness and being devoted to the higher aspect of life and not looking for the results of one's labors. And that seems to be an attitude that we are not these bodies, we are more than the bodies. So it's really adopting an attitude of mind and becoming spiritual beings. And that's a will, that's through will that we need to develop.
Right, it's will and higher desire to become spiritual beings, to uncover our true nature. It was mentioned earlier, the observer, to become the observer of all the events and the circumstances, and knowing what we learn through the teachings of theosophy, which is divine wisdom, power, knowledge, science, and it is universal, these universal principles, that we ally ourselves with those that help us behind the scenes by acting and choosing, by being the observer and acting and choosing always what is to us the better at the time. And we have to understand that it takes a long time. If we act from what we know, or what we think is best, it may not be the best in reality, but it's the best we know at the time. And we see people all the time acting from what they think is best, and in a sense, we can maybe provide an impulse for them, but we can't interfere. We have to watch interfering too much with others, because they need to, things need to play out. They're not going to get it if we say, if we interfere. And that's why the masters don't interfere with us, because we have this sacred thing. Free will is a sacred thing, and it's an awesome duty and responsibility that we have. And we need to use it and choose wisely. In the back?
Well, we were thinking, we have to realize I am a spiritual being. I don't have to do anything to make that real, except use it here, realize it here. Nothing can take away our spiritual nature. It's just if we don't use it on this plane, then we have wasted this opportunity. We will have further opportunities, but why should we be wasting this one? Especially when those great beings you talked about sacrificed so much to give us this possibility. So all we have to do is start making real our spiritual nature.
Yes, we need to make it real. One of the great visions, or one of the things we can contemplate, is that the thread soul, the Sutratma, is the divine ego, the eternal pilgrim, the observer that goes through life after life after life. And in a sense, we're making a necklace out of beautiful pearls to thread. But there are those that drop off. There's just like any pearl, there's some that are of value and some that are not. So we're trying to make a necklace a complete necklace of beautiful pearls, in a sense. It's one vision we could make. Maybe too materialistic, but go ahead.
I have a question. Is enthusiasm a psychic quality?
Is enthusiasm a psychic quality? We think so. Yes?
Is there a difference between higher and lower enthusiasm?
Well, sure. Is there a difference? Okay, that's another one. There's another quick can. We'll get back to that.
It's just the root of the word, entheosism. It really means in the divine. That's what the word comes from. So if you're really enthusiastic, you are at a higher level feeling intensely the beauty of life, of truth.
So, yes, and there's nothing more contagious than laughter and enthusiasm, we think. I mean, laughter is very contagious when especially if it's positive. And you have a contribution?
Well, how? We see enthusiasm in people sporadically, but how do we unlock that key of enthusiasm in ourselves? How do we become abundant in our feelings and giving to others?
Well, how do we, yes, go ahead.
We think it can be accomplished by accepting and performing our duties, those which come to us under law.
Okay, accepting and performing our duties that come to us under law. Another?
By being observant. What a beautiful world this is. In spite of all the things going on, it is radiant with life and beauty. And all of the privilege that we in this room, have in terms of wisdom that we can pick up and carry with us. How many lives do we imagine that we starved for that kind of privilege? So, we are so rich. How can you not be enthusiastic?
Did you have a follow-up?
Just a question. We were wondering if this world itself is an illusion.
Well, that's the oldest question. One of the oldest questions out there is this world itself an illusion? in a sense, it is an illusion, but it's a necessary illusion for soul growth. We need to see through it. It's here for us. The illusion is here for us. And that is what the astral is. It's an illusion. It's illusion meaning light. It's refracted and bent and twisted at times. There's a hand in the very back.
So perhaps enthusiasm is, in a sense, gratitude for whatever we have internally figured out and want to share with another. It's our sort of giving forward in gratitude for what we have been given or figured out or worked through.
Like paying it forward is the, yes.
Well, it's certainly easy to be enthusiastic about a particular person, place, or thing that we enjoy personally. But to do what Mr. Crosby says, to throw our heart and mind into every task, whether it's painful or pleasant, seemingly very important or mundane, we think that's the test of higher enthusiasm. It's a different quality.
Okay, so there is lower and higher enthusiasm. We think that one can be very enthusiastic about gaining a monopoly in business, certainly. We've seen that in the past. The railroad barons were very enthusiastic about building competing lines to try to tear down the other. And but that enthusiasm is rooted in it only goes so deep. The higher enthusiasm thrills through all of the principles, really, and it can't be stopped.
HPB says that there are those who never use the higher mind at all, and there are those who use it so completely and totally that if they look at a litter of baby pigs, they see beauty.
Right.
And that's what we have to come to realize, that everything in the universe has a purpose and is beautiful in and of itself. And again, if we begin to realize how rich we are just in being able to see and hear and think, then how could we not be enthusiastic?
Okay. Boy, a lot of hands, a lot of enthusiasm in the corner.
Well, just watching kids, they're so enthusiastic about everything. So we wonder if there's an innocence to, or even an acceptance of life.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you watch children, they get excited over the least little thing.
Well, we have observed that in children, and we have to remember that they're returning from Devakan, that bliss state, where they had so in a sense they're more in touch with what's real than adults are. And it's true, children have a wonderful contagious enthusiasm, and it rubs off, and they're amazing beings. Yes.
The thought occurs that the word enthusiasm seems as difficult to truly explain as the word love.
The word enthusiasm is as difficult to explain as the word love.
There seems to be so many levels to it, depending upon how we look at it, but in back of all enthusiasm is a oneness, if we are using it the right way. But if we're using it the wrong way, then I guess it belongs to the many.
Ah, interesting concept. The if it's used the right way, it belongs to all, and if using it the wrong way, it's divided, it's separate. So yes.
Well, life gets very confusing when you derive it back to principles. We are here separately. Why? to learn that we're not separate. So we have to use every principle, every attitude, maybe in the wrong way, in order to finally wake up and realize that we are one.
We're here to awaken from the illusion of separateness. We really are. We are all one, and we see that reflection of ourselves and others, and sometimes we don't like what we see, but it's for us to raise it up to a higher octave. We have come to the conclusion of the class. It's 12 noon. So we thank everyone for your enthusiastic participation. It's been very uplifting, and we will continue our studies in psychism and spirituality with next Sunday's topic of mental healing and hypnosis. And of course, we will be beginning chapter 16 of The Ocean on Wednesday night. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.